when I'm talking or working with brands, the two things that I always recommend are, one, you really have to have a strong sense of self. You really have to understand, as a brand, what do you believe in? What do you want to stand up for? And then when those cultural moments are unfolding, that's when you can move quickly and be able to harness them.
Hey, what's up, branding experts? Arek here, and welcome to On Branding Podcast. And today I have a very special guest, Maggie Walsh. So Maggie is a marketing strategist with over 12 years of experience at ad agencies, TV networks, and record labels. But she's passionate about leveraging social fandoms to enhance brand engagement. So throughout her career, she led campaigns for major brands, including Absolut, Johnny Walker, and Oreo, just to name a few. And currently, she works as the head of strategy at Glow, which is a digital marketing agency known for crafting impactful brand narratives. Hello, Maggie. Thanks for joining us today.
Hi, thank you.
So as traditional advertising is changing nowadays, right? And the way we see brands is basically all about the narratives that are being created on social media and also how brands respond to some big cultural moments, right? So can you just talk to us, what do you think, how brands can leverage those moments to create a loyal fan base?
I think it depends on the brand, but I think the ones that do it well are the ones that aren't trying to plan in the moment that it's happening, right? They've already thought about it prior to that moment. Usually when I'm talking or working with brands, I think the two things that I always recommend are, one, you really have to have a strong sense of self. You really have to understand, as a brand, what do you believe in? What do you want to stand up for? What do you not want to stand up for? Really interrogate that and really think about where your hard limits, where your soft limits, things like that. And then when those cultural moments are unfolding, whether it's something you could have predicted or something you didn't predict at all, that's when you can move quickly and be able to harness them. So I think depending on the brand, you can plan something months in advance to harness a cultural moment, like a Super Bowl moment or something like that, or you could jump on a Twitter trend to
make sense. So basically think ahead, do your due diligence, strategy first. Think about what your brand stands for. What are you going to, what values do you stand for? So based on that, you can create that narrative, because there are some pitfalls and mistakes that brands make, right? As you mentioned, when you don't have this strategy and you just jump on the bandwagon. So can you just give us maybe a few common pitfalls or mistakes that brands make when trying to create that loyal fan base and capture those moments? Mm-hmm.
The number one thing is like, saying something when you shouldn't be saying something. I think, you know, everyone talks a lot about authenticity, and I think easier said than done. But to me, it's very simple, right? Do you know who you serve, like the consumer you serve, right? Or the fan that you serve? And do you understand what their needs, their pain points are? And when you're looking at a moment or a cultural moment, do you actually have something to offer in that moment? Is there something that your audience or consumer needs that you as a brand are able to offer? If not, then you probably don't need to say anything. I think there's a lot of pressure, obviously, right now. I think, especially in the social media space, for brands to comment on things, jump in on things, always have a response, always have to say something. Brands don't always have to say something, right? There's probably a lot of power in not saying something. I think it's better to understand and serve what a fan or a consumer might need within that. And they can need a lot of different things, right? I think when I say serving their needs, it could be maybe someone needs a little bit of levity or humor, right? There are brands that can offer that. Maybe they need someone to champion their cause, brands that can do that, right? But if you start from a pretty consumer-centric or a fan-centric point of view, I think that will always steer you right.
Well said. So always focus on your customer. Try to understand them as much as you can, their pain points, their needs. You don't have to respond to all the events. You just need to have a strategy in place to know when to engage, right? Can you just give us some examples of maybe like big brands so people can, you know, understand the concept? Maybe some of the brands that, you know, whether those that you worked with or, you know, you just noticed. Some brands that do it the right way and maybe some brands that I've done this not so good.
Gonna get me in trouble already. I'm gonna start calling out brands on the podcast. I think one of the brands that I worked on for a really long time was Oreo, and I'm really proud of the work that we did together. And I'm proud of them as a brand and their ambition and how they've been able to respond to cultural moments. I think very famously, the one that kind of started that relationship was with a tweet we did during the Super Bowl over a decade ago at this point. And essentially, if you're not familiar with what happened, it was pretty early days of Twitter even being part of a Super Bowl conversation, right? It's everyone tunes in if you're to watch the game. If you work in advertising, you're also tuning in to watch the ads. And we had set up, we had been doing a bunch of social media stuff for the 100th anniversary of Oreo at the time, where we were responding to different pop cultural trends with different things. And so we had set up a live kind of Twitter room to just respond and see what was happening during the game. And what ended up happening was the power went out during that. And instead, we just put like that little tweet that said, power out, no problem. You can still dunk in the dark. I use that as an example because I think it's a clever tweet. Everyone was really excited about it. Everyone saw it because no one was watching the game anymore. They were all turning to Twitter. So it became really popular really quickly. But what's interesting, I think, about Oreo and what they're able to do is it was kind of what was the back end process behind that, the less sexy part of it, that I think started to really become part of their muscle memory and really helped them to start to take even bigger swings in the future. I think even with that particular example, we actually waited longer than you probably most people were aware of because we weren't sure what was going on. We're like, why is the power out? We don't want to react or just respond to respond, even if we could make a funny joke. So let's take a moment, take a beat. We did, and we did that. But I think, you know, even following that, a lot of what Oreo was able to do was think about, again, what was happening in their consumers' lives and happening in the world and what could they do to be a part of it, you know, with, you know, special releases, different kinds of packs that they released and stuff after that. All of those kind of rooted in the same sort of idea of understanding their consumer.
That's a great example. We all know Oreo, so we can relate to that. Any other examples, maybe more recent examples that come to your mind?
Sure. Obviously, I didn't work on this one, but I think there was a lot of conversation, I think, this summer around the Calvin Klein ad with Jeremy Allen White from The Bear. I thought that was interesting. I think what I like about the discourse around that was I think there was obviously a lot of ad people that were saying, was that ad even good? A lot of brands weighed in on it. A lot of people were weighing in on, should people respond to it? And I think, again, like the brands that were able to do things and put out the, hey, maybe there's a couch for free or something just a little bit sexy, I think were the ones that truly understood what people were thinking about, which is, yeah, it's just fun. It's meant to be a little sexy. You really don't need to think about it. You don't need to comment on it. So I thought that was pretty good. I think I've gotten a little bit tired of what I might consider like brand Twitter at this point, or maybe now brand TikTok comment threads, where every single brand is jumping in and piling on the same tweets, making the same joke, making the same sort of Gen Z speak. I see that a lot. I feel like one of the things I talk a lot about with my clients is just because you're serving a young audience, right? Maybe you have a Gen Z audience, maybe you have a teenage audience, doesn't mean you need to sound like them. Doesn't mean you need to act like a teenager or act like Gen Z. It's nice to adopt and be relatable, but I don't think, otherwise every brand would be trying to like recreate themselves every 10 years to sound like whatever teenager was that year. So that's definitely a trend that I feel I caution a lot of brands against, but I also hopefully will start to think it's already starting to.
Yes. So how can brands actually develop their own voice and be distinctive and differentiate themselves? Can you just talk to us about some of the process, some of the behind the scenes on how you work with brands to develop that strategy to later know how to respond to those events?
Sure. It's funny. That's what I was been working on this week. I can't talk about the client, but that was one of the processes that we were doing this week in the office. So I think we do it, I would say, in like a two-step process, though it can depend on the client as well. Again, like where I mentioned at the top, start out by interrogating what your brand stands for, working with the brand itself, your brand guidelines, your brand positioning, all of those things, but trying to pull those elements out to understand, okay, where does that play into social behavior, right? And so getting very specific, what we do in our workshops is sometimes we play around with archetypes and understanding, okay, different brand archetypes. What does that actually mean in terms of how you might act? Are you someone that wants to comment on things, right? Thinking of archetypes of personas at a party, there are the cool people in the back that aren't saying anything and are still very cool. And then there are the people that are in the middle of the dance floor showing off all the new moves and getting everybody onto the dance floor. And I think making those types of decisions around, okay, what's the type of behavior you want to make or embody? And then starting to think about even getting really specific around that. So for all the brands that we work on, we put process documents together of, okay, We have a sense of what we stand for, what we believe in. We have a sense of what kind of behavior we would or wouldn't take as a brand. What about topics? All right. What are the things that we probably have a right to talk about? And what are the things that we probably shouldn't be talking about? And I think it might have to do with where your brand roots are, what kind of products you sell. And then I even work with the teams to put together, sometimes depending on how big the brand is, like chain of command docs, right? Because I think there is nothing more frustrating than something happening, especially in social media in the moment. Everyone's really excited. Everyone's really hyped up. And it dies because it takes 97 layers to get approved between this and legal and whatever. And by the time you get it up there, the trend's over and it's irrelevant. There is no point. As an example, one of the brands that we work on, I think we put in our process document of, did Walmart already comment on this? Then it's probably too late for us. Mm-hmm. No, that's not for every brand, right? This was for a brand that wants to be very progressive and bold. Maybe for some other ones, they're not going to wait till Walmart comments on it. But so again, I think to summarize it, I think it's sweating the details there, right? It's the stuff that makes it seem like you're reacting quickly, right, when you're watching it unfold online. But I think it's all the backend stuff that doesn't leave anything to chance. Now, that being said, you can put 100 process documents together. I could architect every possible scenario and some weird TikTok trend will hit tomorrow that I could never have predicted. And you say, you know what, let's make a judgment call. It works or it doesn't work. There's still a little bit of that spontaneity and that magic that happens.
So just to sum up for our audience, you need to understand your strategy, understand your positioning. Perhaps you can use archetypes, but at the end of the day, you need to be specific and go into detail and try to understand different topics, what to talk about, what to avoid, right? So when the time, because as you mentioned, sometimes you need to respond quickly because as the events unfold, you don't have much time and there are many different layers, as you mentioned, legal, stuff like that. Behind the scenes, I'm actually curious how it works behind the scenes, how you work at Glow. So basically you work with brands, you put together some kind of a presentation, right? You do the strategy, you interview stakeholders, yep. You put some kind of a presentation or a deck, and then you educate the right people on how to act. Or can you talk to us about how it works?
Totally. Again, depends on the organizational system that the brand that we're working on, because they're always going to have their brand set up in different ways. But I can talk a little bit about the setup on our side. Yeah, so we set up the process. And then on our team, we'll usually have community manager, a strategist, art directors, copywriters that are dedicated to that brand. And so process-wise, usually what we're doing is on a daily basis, usually the morning, we are scouring, you know, the internet, we're checking the community, all of those things. Basically, we've always got people plugged in to know what's happening, whether it's happening in what's happening in the brand world or what's happening just in the ethos, in the fan world, if you will. And so that's essentially the first line of defense to see, okay, what's the trend? What's the place that if we want to respond to something? A strategist is usually the one that will flag it and say, hey, this seems like a potential opportunity. This seems like something interesting. They'll pitch it pretty quickly to the rest of the team. If we like it, we'll get creative to brainstorm some stuff. Again, we're a really collaborative environment, so this stuff can happen really quickly. We can get on a Google Meet or something and just be like, let's hop on a call, let's do it. We're talking about within an hour to get it. And then usually what we've done, we like to have, as soon as possible, get to somebody that can approve that social post on the client side. I would say for most of our clients at this point, we're not necessarily having to route every single individual post through legal before it goes up. We've set some guardrails ahead of time and an understanding of what is right or not right. And we have a good sense of that. Though in the past, I've also had it where we've been able to actually work a legal process into it quickly as well. So, hey, who's the lawyer that's going to be on call if we need one? I think because this stuff is happening so quickly now, I think a lot of organizations have caught up and saying, okay, you need to have a little bit of an understanding of how quick we can get stuff up. So that's usually, like I would say, like, in terms of looking at like a trend to getting it up there, like that's the process, right? It goes from strategist and creative team to ideating, concepting, making something, approval, post. And then of course, there's the stuff that never makes it to post, right? Half the time, that same process is, hey, this seems interesting. Do we think we should do it? Let's look at our guidelines, like probably not, this doesn't seem right, or no, let's pass on it. And then nothing happens and we move on. And I think that goes back to what I said earlier, right? I think there's no shame. There's actually a lot of pride in what you're not reacting to, what you're not jumping on, right? Because that kind of goes back to those brands that I was saying before that kind of jump in on everything. They're just always there. They're commenting on everything. They're not really having a strong point of view, and they're not really standing for anything. And again, I think that eventually will start to fall out of favor.
Well explained. So basically, you establish that process, and then based on that, brands know whether to respond or just to pass on that. And if so, then how to respond. And so, yeah, said, this is really interesting. You're my first guest, you know, talking about fandom and creating this brand affinity and capturing those cultural moments. I'm pretty sure our audience will enjoy that conversation. And for those, whether it is for your potential clients or maybe creatives who want to connect with you and have some questions, what's the best way to connect?
Sure. They can email me. They can find me on LinkedIn. So my name is Maggie Walsh on LinkedIn. Easy to find. Or you can always email me at Maggie, maggie.walsh@weareglow.com.
Awesome. And we're going to link to your website, weareglow.com. Thanks for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate the conversation. You.